This podcast is presented by Hannover Messe, your leading event for industrial AI.
Hi there, welcome to a new episode of the Industrial AI podcast. My name is Peter Seeberg and my guest today is Peter Sarlin. He's the CEO and co-founder at Silo AI. Peter and I are going to talk about AI by Silo AI, what that means you're going to soon hear. I believe that one of the main topics is certainly going to be their Poro large language model, but Peter is going to tell us. Hello from Peter to Peter.
Hello, great to be here with you.
Peter, please introduce yourself to our Industrial AI podcast listeners.
Yes, so I'm one of the co-founders and the CEO of Silo AI, private AI lab headquartered in Helsinki. And we founded end of 2017. Before that, I have an academic background, so done a PhD in machine learning, been in a professorship, led a small research group. Originally, I am from Finland, but spent most of my career elsewhere, including Germany. And then moved back in 2016 to jump ship from academia together with my research group and a few other co-founders, and eventually to co-found Silo. And since end of 2017, been putting my focus in building a European AI flagship company with Silo AI.
I was going to ask you for one sentence on Silo, but maybe you just said it already. I don't know. What is Silo AI in one sentence?
Yeah, in one sentence,
yes.
Silo AI is a private AI lab that helps companies build AI-driven products by providing a combination of models, tools, and services.
Very good. And I'm going to ask you to spend a little bit more time as well. I'm just going to go back to the 2017. That's probably around 2016, 17, I got, you know, stronger than before into data science, AI data. And that's a lot longer than I believe we're going to maybe talk later about what is your competitive environment, but that's a lot longer than some of the startups in machine learning, in large language models today, right?
Yes, indeed. So we founded the company during the previous AI hype, and today we're a bit more than 300 people, almost 350. Majority have a PhD in AI-related fields. So we are out of the sort of privately owned AI, pure play AI companies. We are one of the largest, if not the largest in Europe. And that sort of certainly is something we have been putting efforts into before this AI hype and before the last year during which many AI companies have been founded.
Very interesting. I wasn't aware that there was a previous hype, but at least, I don't know. I think it was around the same time that my colleagues at that time, Softing, that we got into data, into data science, but then we had always been doing data. But right. So why don't you continue a little bit longer then? Give us an overview on you told us two, three things about your company. Maybe, you know, add a couple of things that are important for you, like just the overview. We go into the details later on, like what is the products, the services, what are your markets, people you already set. So a little bit more information, please.
Yeah, so Silo's unique capability is really a world-class team of some of the most experienced scientists. As I emphasized, majority of the people have a long background in the field. And that's really been the sort of the angle with which we have been able to create significant value to our clients. So we're originally a bootstrap revenue-funded company. We've grown together with clients. We more than doubled in size a bit more than 4 years in a row. And all of that sort of relied on ensuring that we're succeeding in creating sustainable value with AI. So we've taken a very different angle to the market. And that's a combination of course, world-class talent and professional services, but then also our platform Silo OS, which consists of development and deployment tooling and infrastructure, as well as pre-built components for a wide range of different solutions. And then, as you highlighted in the very beginning, also models. So we have a family of large language models that are open source and on top of which we innovate when we build solutions and products to our clients.
That sounds really good. I hear you say that your world-class team of colleagues is kind of at the center of whatever you do, if I may put it like that. And if it's okay, we're going to be talking at the end, we're going to talk a little bit more about how you do that, because you know, we can read, and when we talk to people on a global level in exactly, especially the, but not only the large language model, the machine learning, the whatever is artificial intelligence world, everybody is saying how awfully difficult it is to find good people. So why don't you continue with telling us what are the industries that you provide your products, your services into?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. We actually work with quite a wide range of different industries, and that really comes from the angle with which we look at the market and value creation with AI. We see that AI on its own and in itself rarely creates value, but the way that value happens and is created is through digital services and products, really at the core of companies. And that implies that sort of the engagement model that we have sort of relies on helping fairly mature companies that already have a digital product at the core of their business in building an industry-leading product out of that is AI-driven. So we work with everything ranging from, say, automotive and smart machines, including, of course, self-driving technology, but not only cars, but also vessels, forestry machines, mining machines, which is our largest segment, and a wide range of different sort of, say, industrial use cases around sensor data. And then ranging to a wide range of different applications, what we call smart society, that includes a wide range of different industries, healthcare, finance, retail, logistics, and so forth. But the common denominator really is that our clients are, say, software defined. They have a software product at the core of their business and operations, and we help them in building AI at the core of that software product.
Okay, very interesting approach. Those listeners that feel themselves they have already a software defined company, they might be interested at some point in time they get in touch with you. And those listeners that do not yet have, maybe they first need to become a software-defined company. You already mentioned industrial use cases. I read that you have about over 200 successful AI implementations. Maybe you want to share one or two general, I would say, outside of industrial. We are the Industrial AI Podcast. Two of your favorite ones, just very, you know, quickly, like what is about, what type of AI that you use, and then maybe do the same thing for industrial. Maybe give us just one, two typical use cases of, you know, what you have in the past implemented.
Yeah, so if we start off with use cases outside of the industrial world, a long time focus area for us has been language models. I mean, of course, now everyone is talking about large language models, but that's not a new field. If we take large language models specifically and what has really changed here during the past year, it is that foundation models are used as a basis for a wide range of different downstream applications. And this is what we are seeing happening. We have an example client in healthcare software where we have basically built a sovereign LLM at the core of their patient record system, one of the largest in Northern Europe, and hence sort of allow our client to provide an assistant to the medical advisors that are ultimately using their software product. In the same way, we are working with a client in customer support where they have, it's one of the largest BPOs, so they serve clients with customer support services. They have 2 million customer support agent interactions on a daily basis. And likewise, we've integrated an LLM-based solution at the core of their software product, which again empowers all of their end users. So that's just two examples that sort of tie into the current wave where LLMs are becoming just an integrated part of software products.
Okay. And the second one was an industrial, or is that, can you give us one specifically in industrial as well?
In an industrial context, one of our long-term clients is accompanying mining machinery, for instance, ranging from autonomy in the mine environment to mine machines to various types of intelligent features, ranging from rock and boulder segmentation to drill and various types of hole and bolt operations as part of the mine machines, where we know that computer vision is becoming an integrated element of these machines in various ways and allows automated features, and especially then on the edge in a mine environment where you are not necessarily connected to the cloud. And this, of course, is a core element of these products that the companies are building, be it a car manufacturer or a mining machine manufacturer. And like the previous examples, these are product development engagements, and they are not aiming for productivity and efficiency per se, but it's actually sort of going after a revenue opportunity and building competitive edge into their products. And this is usually the sort of the specific angle that our clients have to building own custom AI and differentiation into their products.
Very good. We're going to be talking about autonomy towards the very end, if that's okay with you as well. That was a specific thing I saw. We'll talk about edge and cloud as well. Yes, very clear. I understand that you almost have to use edge when you are underground in the mine, so to say. What is with these, what you call over 200 maybe solutions, what is a typical kind of solution? You already said you've been dealing with large language models other than, you know, I believe most of the you know, other companies that we have been talking to for a long time. But what is the kind of, let's say, is it, you know, can you say it's machine learning? Maybe you go one step further below, but is that the typical thing, whatever you have been able to do with machine learning to help these companies with?
Yeah, it's, a solution is sort of actually a bit of an ambiguous concept in the sense that it sort of, it requires a holistic approach to really sort of viewing AI as a core element of product. And that implies that, as you indicated, in many cases, we're working with companies that are software defined already or that are in the process of becoming software defined. I mean, I strongly believe in software eating traditional industries and then ultimately AI being sort of part of the value creation there. And then it requires actually quite a sort of wide scope in succeeding. So it's not really about a point solution. It's actually most often about holistically understanding how you are collecting data, what are the specific sensors, what's the edge compute that is needed, what are the then ultimately type of machine learning algorithms or computer vision or language models needed. And then eventually, how do you scale in production? How do you really run sort of, say, MLOps activities in order to be able to operate not only one algorithm or solution, but actually a large number of them, and also sort of continuously have them updated.
I was going to ask you at this very point about, is there a difference? Is there additional requirements? You mentioned MLOps. When we talk about industrial AI, when we talk about, I think you call it production grade AI, or, you know, if you, you know, work and you say in a holistic approach with your customers that are not in what we call industry, so whatever, you said healthcare, retail, whatever it's going to be, in the end, is it the same? Because you need to make sure that whatever you have running needs to continue running. Or to come back to the original question, is there, you know, a couple of levels or whatever requirements more that we have in an industrial environment?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's more in an industrial environment. I would say that it's different. It's very different when it comes to healthcare and specific regulations related to that. It's very different when it comes to various types of consumer applications, consumer devices. It's different in the car industry compared to, for instance, the, you know, mining machines. So I think every single company lives in a quite different environment when it comes to many things. But of course, there's a lot of similarity in how you sort of succeed in running AI in production at scale, and not only sort of having one person or two persons and one sort of use case in production, but actually having several hundreds of people working on model development and model updates across the organization that needs to be systematically also then organized. So I think ultimately a lot of companies are facing today the challenge of moving from these individual proof of concepts and solutions to doing it sort of at scale systematically.
God, yeah, I think maybe that sometimes we feel that we're special, special in our industrial AI environment. Of course, we all want to make sure that our production lines don't stand still, that the highest quality comes out, et cetera, et cetera. But I perfectly take your answer to say it's just different because, you know, the thought that I have in healthcare, I mean, we're dealing with people, we're dealing with, you know, we don't want things to happen. I mean, if they happen, it's better a scratch on a piece of metal than a scratch on a human being. One final question I have in this area of, let's say, the holistic approach to, you know, providing AI with companies and then moving into your Poro large language model. You already referred to it at the very beginning. You have a called Silo AI operating software system. Can you talk a little bit about that or what is its role, how you deal with it?
Yeah, so that's been something we've been building since day one and has been sort of a core element in creating value to our clients, where we, of course, as I indicated in the beginning, we're now a team of more than 300 AI experts, majority PhDs in the field and very skilled and experienced in building AI. But then, of course, the value creation comes from not only the individual people that are engaged, but also the pre-built components and infrastructure that we bring into engagements and reference implementations for a wide range of different solutions. And that's sort of been lying at the core of how we operate and ensure that we are creating value towards our clients. In practice, it's been to us a value accelerator that has not been built out as a pure play off-the-shelf product business. And the reasoning behind that has been that value in this custom AI environment is rarely created with off-the-shelf AI, but requires a bit of a custom approach where we can significantly benefit from having a development tooling, deployment tooling in place that we can utilize when sort of moving from one client to another. They can benefit from the same, but in many cases then we derive a starting point from our what we call Silo OS, so operating software, and then implement custom for that specific environment. Because, you know, companies that are in an industrial context need different compared to healthcare, compared to other companies. And also within industrial clients, different sort of production lines and different contexts in visual quality control or predictive maintenance and so forth will need a different implementation. And I think ultimately this all boils down into the important, which is a bit of a separate discussion that we could probably talk half an hour about just that.
But yeah, we can do that next time. Yeah.
It's the build or buy decision, which I actually think is really, really important and should be driving the decisions in where you build own and where you actually should utilize existing products. And as you know, I've emphasized already, our clients and we aren't serving necessarily those that should be buying products. There's a lot of software vendors providing sort of AI-assisted and AI-powered software products. But for many, that would be good enough. And then we are, on the other hand, building for those that are really going for differentiation and competitive edge and committing to long-term product development initiatives and in building something that creates significant value at the core. And that's where we sort of bring in a Silo OS and then also a very skilled senior team that is capable of building custom.
Very good. Move on. What does the Finnish word poro mean?
The Finnish word poro means reindeer.
Reindeer.
As you alluded to, that is our family of language models.
Tell us, what is your family of language models? You already told us that you've actually, I believe from the beginning or rather early, have been dealing with. So was Poro there from the beginning? Were other ones there? Give us an overview of what you already said. It's open source, I believe. So tell us, what is Poro for you as a company and for your customers?
Yes. Before sort of explicitly defining what Poro is and where we are with those specific models, I'll give you the logic behind how I see and we see that value is created. The new era of AI that, you know, everyone has now been talking about during the past year really, I think, boils down to the fact that we have more powerful so-called foundation models. So these very, very large, more general purpose sort of starting points for specific use cases. And that's how I see large language models are sort of creating, one could say, a digital infrastructure that allows actually many more to innovate. It's not actually only for the few that are able to invest enough into data, compute, and so forth. But this actually sort of gives the power of AI to many more. And that comes by basically using a foundation model as a starting point and then specializing towards specific tasks, because these large language models are still not sort of general purpose AI or AGI in any way, but they are just sort of something that allows you to tackle specific problems better. And that has been the sort of angle with which we have been then approaching the large language model market. So Poro is an open source model, fully open in the sense that we're not only just releasing the model weights, but we're releasing the architecture, the underlying data that has been used, and even checkpoints throughout training. The specifics and the sort of competitive advantage we have with this model and the model family is that it focuses on European low resource languages. So the first models have basically proven that the approach we take to cover low resource languages leads to best in class models for low resource languages without compromising performance in English.
What do you mean by low resource, Peter?
Low resource means basically in practice today, everything else than English. But of course, you know, we are most concerned about the languages that are spoken clearly less than English. So Poro has started with a proof point related to the Finnish language and the Nordic languages. And now at the moment, we are expanding to adding support to all European languages and programming languages. So this is basically the specific angle we have where we believe sort of these low resource languages, including German, of course, as well, should be a core element of these models and should be accounted for when we are, for instance, building the reasoning capabilities in this model. So it's not enough that it has a translation capability. If you want these models to be representative to the values, the culture, and the way that language is being used in that specific country, then that reasoning capability needs to actually descend from that specific language data.
Let me understand, by you choosing a very specific approach, you say low resource languages, European values, here you say open source is another thing, you maybe there's two, three other things, that is going to give you kind of a fair chance to be chosen by potential customers, which you should maybe talk about as well. Are they business customers? Are they consumers? And could that mean that, you know, today, tomorrow, in 1 or 2, 3, 4 years, people, you know, around the world are going to be choosing one model? Maybe they're going to have different models. So maybe they're going to be using your Poro for Finnish or German, and they're going to be using some other model for, let's say, an industrial purpose. How do you see that, your view of that total market developing and the role that you will be playing in such a market?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question or set of questions. My view on the market is really that I do think sort of going ahead that it's a sort of sovereignty question, what models are being used for this more general purpose chatbots like ChatGPT. So I think that's one crucial element. I mean, it's something that will and already has an impact on society and how we sort of operate in the world and see the world. But then sort of going beyond that, because I think these general purpose chatbots are just one use case. It's an important one, but it's one use case. I think ultimately, large language models will be, as I gave you a few examples in the beginning, they will be just an integrated part of software products, for various sort of horizontals and verticals, be it the CRM or ERP system for enterprise software, be it healthcare, media, finance, industrial software, and so forth. It will be an integrated element in these software products. And then it's a crucial question from the perspective of whether you are building competitive edge. And that's sort of the decision to build or buy is going to be crucial for where you have competitive edge as a software product company in these spaces. So that is, of course, a little bit of a different perspective to the market. And if we then go back to our perspective as Silo AI. Today, we are serving business customers. We're not in the consumer space. And the way we look at value creation is that basically our open source models are building a digital infrastructure that allows these businesses to innovate on top. And, you know, I said already more than a year back that open source models will eventually be competitive. And that is what has happened during last year. Of course, there is a lot of different open source models, and we're not trying to say that our models would be better for every single purpose out there. There's going to be much, much more coming up during this year as well. So the specific angle we have to the market is that our models provide best language support to the European languages that we are covering. And then what we provide is a platform that allows our clients to basically serve the models, to ensure that they are trustworthy, robust, reliable, and then eventually to continuously collect data and learn from their data and eventually build that sort of competitive edge for their own specific use case. And I think that is the sort of most important element for companies that want to compete in the new era of AI.
That sounds really great. I think two things, and maybe there's a third one. So Robert and I have been talking about, you mentioned foundation models. So we, Industrial AI, in our conferences with our attendees, talk many times about industrial foundation models. Now, is that along the lines of what you were saying? So it doesn't have to be only industrial, whatever, but like if you have a customer in the industrial space, you say, could they potentially be using a general industrial foundation models, you know, all industrial companies, if that is ever going to become available, could use that. And then by adding, so to say, their own experience, their own data in subsegments of the industry, that's what I maybe heard you say, then they would kind of be building their own specific subsegment industry model, if it's still called a foundation model. Is that something that you have been considering or...
Yeah, it is obvious that there will be sort of industry specific or say vertical and horizontal domain models and for industrial use cases as well. And this is what I meant with the fact that there's going to be continuous innovation in both the open source community and also closed source community. And to a large extent, the open source models will function as a basis to create new sort of value propositions to specific markets. And I think, you know, going ahead, the reality will be that in 1 year, in 2 years, there's going to be plenty of new models. Whatever choice we do today will eventually, at some point, be questioned by the existence of new models. And hence, I think the focus should really be on ensuring that you are continuously building competitive edge and differentiation through your data. And ultimately, sort of then you can tap into the new domain models, for instance, that come up in a year or in 2 years. Then on the other hand, I think the reality is also that the current state of open source models is already pretty good. I think a key element is that you have the language support that you need and that you have reasoning capabilities that are good enough. And then in many cases, you can actually get pretty far by ensuring that you have good enough fine-tuning done together with guardrails and RAG and other sort of technical ways of ensuring that the model is trustworthy and reliable.
Very good. I talked last week, it was with Mehmet from ABB about AI, large language models in process industry, this case specifically. Then this week, Aramco, they announced I think they called it an industrial model. And then there was a huge discussion on LinkedIn about this is basically completely impossible. Now I'm going to ask you and combine it with my pre-final question. You know, you said you have been looking into large language models from the beginning, but as you correctly say, you know, the last year kind of AI has been almost exclusively large language models. So my question was going to be anyway, are large language models taking over from other AI technologies, machine learning, supervised reinforcement learning, whatever kind of wonderful algorithms we have had, and combine that with, you know, can large language models even be used to make our production lines, our industrial AI discrete or process autonomous or more towards autonomous?
Yeah, I certainly see large language models as a key innovation and overall sort of transformer architectures that are the underlying, or that is the underlying technology behind large language models, especially for generative purposes. And I certainly see that self-supervision that they rely on is a key element. But I do not believe that sort of all AI use cases will be taken over by this large language model technology that we happen to use today. So if we look at the, I don't have the exact data on this, but I mean, if we look at the number of AI models in production today, a clear majority is going to be something totally different from large language models. So the reality is that we are very far from a world where LLMs would somehow be taking over all of the AI use cases in production. And I think also going ahead, there will be plenty of innovation. You know, I think what we can conclude is that this transformer architecture has been quite powerful when it comes to, especially when it comes to textual data and language data. I think we've seen also some use cases where it's being applied to like real-world use cases where it's being applied to pixels and images. And for instance, the context of being able to operate in the real world where you also have vision capabilities. But I think sort of vision is quite a different world when it comes to sort of building trustworthy, robust, and reliable technology. So for instance, you know, having a transformer-based model running an autonomous vehicle is quite far from where we are today with the transformer architecture.
Great. Thank you very much for giving me 5 more minutes. This means we have 2 more minutes left, and I just want you to finish off with the what you started with. You know, it's almost like the way that I, in the US, learned how to present. Tell the people what you're going to talk about it, and tell them again. You said, you know, at the core of your business is a team of 300 plus, many of them PhDs team. Tell us a little bit more. Tell us where you're based. I missed you actually last week. There was a deal you had here. I think you're looking at a Munich office as well here. Tell us a little bit more about your people, where you are, and tell us as well if you're looking for people. How do you get those wonderful people? How do you keep them?
Yeah, so we're headquartered in Finland, but a large share of our employees are elsewhere. So we have large offices across the Nordics, of course. Then we have an R&D center in Amsterdam in the Netherlands, and we have an R&D center in Vancouver in Canada. And then, yes, as you indicated, we are setting up an office in Munich. We have a few people on the ground already and are hiring both in Germany, but also in our other locations. You know, our approach to building the team has always been driven by the clients we are serving, and that implies that we are expanding to the markets where we are serving clients, which includes the DACH region and especially the Munich region, and which of course also includes North America and the West Coast. So we are hiring across our offices and looking for talented people that want to work with other extremely talented people and that want to work with some of the most challenging problems in AI.
Peter, thank you very much. Please run. Say I'm sorry to the people who you were supposed to be with already 5 minutes ago. It was wonderful talking to you. And those listeners interested, we'll put your LinkedIn profile into the podcast notes so people can contact you. Thank you very much, Peter.
Thanks a lot. It was a great pleasure.
Thanks. Bye-bye.